Visit our website at BostonBastardBrigade.com for recent news, reviews, podcast episodes, and videos featuring members of the B3 crew.
Become friends with us on MySpace at MySpace.com/BostonBastardBrigade, as well as on Facebook. You can even find our Twitter accounts on our official homepage.
And don't forget to check out our friends at the Electric Sisterhood at ESH.MOBI for another side of news and review, including their own glorious podcast show.
The following is a special Boston Bastard Brigade presentation.
Of Toronto's award-winning band Fucked Up. In 2009, they won the Polaris Prize for their critically acclaimed album, The Chemistry of Common Life, cementing themselves as one of the most important figures in Canadian music. Their latest album, the rock opera David Comes to Life, is currently repeating the same critical trend as their preceding albums, and also debuted on the Billboard 200 at number 83. Tonight, they're here at the Royale on Tremont Street. It is my pleasure to welcome the big Canadian ninja himself, Damien Pig Eyes Abraham.
How am I supposed to follow up that introduction? You know, I'm never going to live up to that.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Yeah, well, it's been an amazing 10 years for all of you guys. During these 10 years, you've won critical acclaim, the Polaris Prize, the respect of the most unlikely appears, and have practically become household names. Looking back when you first started this band, did you ever think you would accomplish as much as you have?
Oh, no. No, there's like, I think there's like, especially in Canada, because we have a really different beast, the Canadian music industry, but there's almost like two types of bands that form. Bands that form, just to be a band, and bands that form that they want fame and success. We were just a band, and I think we were less than just a band. We were like a group of people kind of just playing together, not even in any sort of like real aspirations of anything beyond putting out a 7-inch. I think when we first started, a 7-inch was kind of like the pipe dream, you know?
Yeah.
And when we put out No Pazeron, and we're like, wow, we did it. And then we were just like, by that point, we were just like, let's just keep putting out as many records as possible. And like, yeah, no, it's really weird. I think it's living proof that if your music teacher tells you you have no talent at music, don't listen to them, because you're going to one day make your living doing it.
That's the exact same thing that happened with Amanda Palmer of the Dresden Dolls. Her music teacher said she couldn't sing to save her life.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, she's a better singer than I. I'm good at taking my shirt off and exposing my flesh.
Nothing wrong with that.
No, exactly.
Talking about exposing really flesh, I need to clear up a rumor that I heard about you.
What's that?
I heard after the Bruins beat Vancouver for the Stanley Cup, the riot was going on, right?
Yes.
And you walked in the crowd and said, make love, not war, grab the first woman, you were the guy making out with the woman.
I would have been so far away from a hockey riot. Like, I bear in mind, being from Toronto, I grew up and hockey was like the very popular thing that everyone played. Like, everyone loved hockey. And so, growing up for me, as like a guy who was not very athletic, hockey season was like always the time of year where all my friends would stop wanting to hang out and play Dungeons and Dragons or doing what I usually did with them and start watching hockey. So when hockey season rolls around, I go into hibernation. I know, no disrespect, because I understand, like, you know, obviously, don't get me wrong, as someone from Toronto, anytime someone finds a way to better Vancouver, I am happy. So, as a non-hockey fan, today I'm a Bruins fan.
Well,
yeah, there we go.
Thank you. And truly, we need to thank you in Toronto.
Yes?
Because you guys made a really horrible meal for Phil Kessel.
Yeah.
And we got Taylor Sagan, who actually basically helped us beat Tampa Bay.
Well, you know who owns the Toronto Maple Leafs? The teachers in Canada.
Yeah.
So they're more into, you know, turning a profit than making a team.
Now,
and it's so good.
Tonight, we find out if you guys helped us even more, because we do have your first round pick. But we were nice, and we gave you, in exchange for Thomas Cavalier, our first round, which is 25th week number 9. And unfortunately, due to some really big idiots in hockey, we actually have a guy that could be potentially the number one draft pick. Huh? Who's just undersized coming our way?
Yeah. Oh well, there you go. Well, Toronto, us Canadians are very polite and generous, and even if it means us sacrificing our sports team that we built our entire city upon,
of course,
so Boston can do better.
Yeah, you're just our sister to the north.
Exactly.
Boston wins, we win.
We win exactly.
We're a farm.
Maybe Toronto will just be a farmer.
Hold on. Let's go for a drive.
I'm gonna get run out of Toronto if anyone hears this. I'm just kidding. I love sports. Well, who was the head coach that at one point wanted to bring in sumo wrestlers?
What?
The hockey coach that.
Yeah. Yo. The one was their defenseman in goal.
Yo, Mike. Who was the hockey coach that wanted to bring in sumo wrestlers to be cool?
That's probably
and he had trials. He flew in a sumo wrestler to try being able to get goals.
And then he also tried to get him to play defense as well.
Yeah.
He figured no one could score.
Just play the whole match. What could possibly go wrong?
Yeah.
Rolling.
Yeah, he squatted down in front of the net and there was no room. Unfortunately, he cramped up.
Yeah.
No problem.
Just need to get the stress test.
Yes. Yeah. Every game.
Yeah, I grew up.
Okay.
Well, I know you're kind of a little bit tired about talking about this, but you're here promoting David Come to Life. Where did the concept originate from? Because I've overheard that the song off of Hidden World almost got cut.
Well, no, originally the song of the Hidden World was going to be called Ian Comes to Life, and it was about our friend Ian Dixon, and he was like, he's like a really good friend of ours, and he's still a really good friend of ours, but he was greatly offended that we signed to a certain record label that wasn't Matador. So we wrote the song for Hidden World called David Comes to Life, and originally it was going to be Ian Comes to Life, and then Mike's like, he changed it to David, and I'm like, sure, yeah, that's no problem. So we changed the lyrics to David, and then we started joking about, for years, turning that into some sort of rock opera narrative thing.
Yeah.
And I don't know, I kind of thought it was a joke. Like, I never thought we'd go through with it. And even when we're recording vocals in December, I'm like, yeah, we're going to back at this at any moment. Like, we're gonna just give up and record a regular record. So it was just kind of like, almost like a dare. And I'm really happy we did it because I think for us, it, you know, like it was something new that we hadn't tried before.
Right.
You know, like so much of a band is repetition, like, do the same things over and over again. That
yes.
Anytime you can do something different or new, it makes it way more exciting for you and stuff. So for us, it was a really fun way to try and write something different than we've written before.
And I think you referenced that in one of the 7-inches, Octavio Made the Bomb.
Yeah.
Which absolutely. I actually just got in the mail today.
Oh, you did? Yeah. Awesome. Yeah, no, that was like for us, that's our story, a sum up. That sums up the story. And we give a shout out to New York Fries, which is a fry place in Toronto.
Nice.
I did an interview with some guy in New York, and he's like, what the hell is New York Fries? And I'm like, yeah, it just seems so arbitrary now that you think about it. Like, you don't think of French fries, you don't think of New York when you think of French fries.
There's Boston Pizza up there.
Boston Pizza, which is a terrible franchise. And
it is terrible.
And it is sullying the name of your city.
I've had it before.
It's gross.
I tried to cross it out and put some really horrible names.
Yes.
I got yelled at. And, you know, I'm sorry, but the RCMP does not, you know, like that.
No, they do not like you defacing Boston pizzas. They're our national treasure. They're protected like the Canadian goose, our national bird.
And the only time the name ever changed was recently when we played Vancouver.
That was called Vancouver Pizza?
Could I make a change?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
They called it Vancouver Pizza for the entire Stanley Cup.
I had no idea. That there was one near my house that just got shut down. Actually, in the mall where we wrote all the lyrics that we talked about in Octavio Built the Bomb.
Yeah.
And that's where we were like, we sat in the food court and we wrote this record.
Right.
But not in the Boston Pizza, which is down the hall.
Well, what I love about David Comes to Life, it's not just a fourth wall breaking rock opera, it's a fifth wall. I mean, because you've got Octavio, who is a narrator, and you're not supposed to talk to the narrator, yet you drag him to the story, and then all the characters realize, wait, we're in the story.
Yeah. Well, because I've always loved that. You know, like, my favorite part of the Never Ending Story was when, you know, he tells them that they're all in the story and that this is all part of this book, you know, and I kind of love, you know, there's this idea that, like, you know, our fate is forewritten for us. You know, like, it's not a religious thing, but I just think, like, it's so much more comforting to think if everything's laid out in front of you and that there is some sort of grand architect, even when things go wrong, there's some sort of writer writing above you. And I think in a play, it's you know, you're the audience, and in any form of media, you're like a voyeur, right? Like, you're sitting there watching other people's lives. And, you know, it's funny when the characters catch you and the audience watching them. And so,
yeah,
it was just like, it was our way of, like, I think basically when we wrote this play, we looked at a bunch of different things we loved in plays and stories, yeah. And we're just like, I'm gonna steal that, and like, and assembled, and then also put our own lives into it, I guess.
Right. Now, we know about David, we know about Veronica, Octavio, and Vivian. One character that you've mentioned, at least on the album site, that I think is still a mystery to many of us, is Nick Fenstel. Like,
yeah.
What role does he play in the story, and how does he affect the other characters?
I don't know, Mike? How does Nick Fenstel affect the other characters? Nick Fenstel was always the character that I felt was superfluous in the story. But
really?
Yeah, because like, we had the character, and he kept switching his role.
Oh.
When we were writing it, like, we had him as, at one point, David's best friend, and then the factory owner. And so, you know, it allows him to play sort of like a villainous character, but not as devious as Octavia.
Okay. Now, as mentioned before, David Comes to Life debuted at number 83 on the Billboard 200. Not just your highest debut on the chart, but I think the highest charting debut ever for, like, any hardcore punk band.
Well, I think probably, like, Hatebreed or Terror. Like, it depends your definition, right? Like,
yeah.
I'm talking about hardcore. I'm sure some people, if they would be like, fuck, it's not a hardcore band either. You know,
right.
Like, that's the thing of, like, I think hardcore, it's such a
broad term.
And it's also, like, it's so defined by other people, you know? Like, I'm sure, I guarantee there's terrible bands on the Warped Tour that I would never call hardcore millionaires. They'd probably consider themselves
hardcore.
Very hardcore. So,
yeah, it happens.
Yeah, like, so, like, you know, Hatebreed or Terror definitely have debuted higher. And to me, those bands are hardcore bands.
Right.
But, yeah, I think we're definitely, you know, certainly from our era, I was shocked to see it. Like, because it was like, that to me is, I think we're lucky because the record industry has gotten so bad that our sales, which were, you know, I'm proud of, but like, we're the record industry's gotten so bad that our sales look good. You know, like, it was like one of those things.
I like to think that we now live in a generation where a song called Fuck You can be a number one hit. Fuck You can now be a number one band.
I think there will have to be some other things to change. I think I'll have to lose some weight, get some hair plugs.
Wait, no. You need to put on more weight. Grow out the beard again.
I'm going to grow out the beard again.
And you need the purple sweatshirt.
I got the purple sweatshirt.
You have the purple sweatshirt?
I just didn't bring it on the tour.
I love the purple sweatshirt.
No, I should have brought the purple sweatshirt. I wore it actually on the cover of our local magazine.
What's funny, I was at a store the other day, and there's a purple sweatshirt, but it wasn't my size. It was a bike. So that way, when we walked around, I could be like...
It could have been like, Barney has twins.
But, you know... Not in a strange way.
Well, and also, I think the difference is your mass is muscle. Mine is fat.
Pull it up.
No, but, like, I can tell. Like, you're a muscular dude, you know? Like, we don't have to have an arm wrestle to prove that you're muscles and I'm just dead weight.
Yeah, but you're a better singer than me, so it's okay.
Oh, well, thank you very much, because...
I left them in the shower, and I've had a half gallon of Jack.
You should hear me sing that.
The Metallica. After half going to Jack, Metallica ain't gonna shit on me.
Now, one of the cool things you did to promote David Comes to Life was release David's Town.
Yeah.
On Record Store Day. Composed of 11 fictitious bands. Now, how did you come up with this concept?
It was actually like, I just kind of was doing an interview and I just started talking. I'm like, I have this idea to this compilation of bands from this town. And it was kind of inspired by this friend of ours, Owen Pallett, who plays under the name Final Fantasy sometimes.
Ooh.
He did a rock opera called Heartland, or like a concept record called Heartland, and on it, and then he did a 7-inch of songs that the people in the town, folk songs from the town that it was meant to take place in. I'm like, oh, that's such a cool idea. And I love like Killed by Death compilations and all like those No One's on the Guest List, like those Robin Lobster comps, and I'm like, all these like sort of like regional compilations that came in Boston, not LA, and stuff like that, and like a lot of UK ones. So for me, it was just like a really neat way for us to try and do different styles and get a bunch of friends involved. Because I think when we started doing David Comes to Life, we decided we didn't want a lot of guests, but we really enjoyed working with other people.
Right.
So this is a way of still finding a way to work with other people.
Yeah. Because I gotta admit, when I heard Gacy and the Boys, initially when I first heard a Fucked Up, that was what I thought was gonna be your song. I thought that was gonna be your music.
Well, then thank God Fucked Up is not just me. Because that would be what it would sound like. No, Gacy and the Boys is the first song where I played everything. And anyone who thinks that when I say I can't play guitar or drums, that I'm lying, I think that song will prove otherwise. I think that song can prove quite nicely otherwise.
Right. Well, I think I speak for everyone when I say that I'm sad that I'll never get to see, like, Porcelain on Porcelain or Animal Man.
Well, we had
Red Stockings live.
Well, we had talk about doing that song live and the Curry song live. And we still might.
Oh, please do Unrequited Love tonight.
Maybe. He's like, excuse me, I'm trying to eat over here. Can you get me out of this?
No, I would love to. Maybe we'll do, when we do the whole record, start to finish, we'll do another night where we'll try and get all the guests in town. And we'll
that would be epic.
That'd be pretty funny. We should try and do that.
Should we do like the end of October and give it to me as a birthday present?
Well, we always do that's when we do our Fucked Up weekend every year at the end of October. So, happy birthday.
You only turned 25 once.
No, I only turned 32 once.
Wow. I was gonna make a joke. Actually, you know what? Now we know where the muscle mass went. I was like that. Just kidding.
Now, recently you released the music video for Queen of Hearts, which was brilliantly done. But I'm just curious, why did you go that route instead of doing like the first part of the story?
I don't think we can take any credit for the video, actually. It was this director named Scott Cudmore, who's a friend of Sandy's and Mike's, or Sandy's mainly, from Toronto. And he's just an incredibly talented director and kind of came to us and was like, I want to do a video.
Yeah, go Sandy.
And and we were like, yeah, go for it. He gave us the treatment, and I guess Mike and Sandy looked over and said, this looks cool. Yeah, let's see. And we had no idea it was going to turn out as well as it did, because it looks amazing.
Yeah,
I'm so happy with it. I think it's good that we didn't try and make, you know, like, it's our first video we've ever done.
Right.
So for us to try and make a literal interpretation of the record, I think it might have looked a little weird. So, you know, maybe we'll try it later on and stuff. I think that song is good at capturing... This sounds so cheesy, but like kind of captures like the mood of the song.
Yeah, about being in love.
About being in love, and it's like young kids, and it's about innocence, and but it's also like dark too, because the teacher's talking about before the war and all this thing. So yeah, I'm so proud of that video, and I only wish I could take credit for it because we had no involvement. Scott Cudmore deserves all the credit, and the kids are amazing, actually. Yeah. Last Thursday, we played a show in Toronto, and the blonde-haired kid came to the show, and we got to meet him and thank him in person, because those kids were phenomenal.
And there's another thing that you would never expect 10 years ago.
No,
singing a video.
Oh, yeah, or making a video, period, you know?
Right.
And that night, we played in Dundas Square in Toronto, which was like, I guess it would be almost like Harvard Square. No, I don't know, it's like a much smaller version of
this. Was at North by Northeast.
Yeah, and it was just like, how can a band called Fucked Up get these opportunities? You know, it's just like so... I feel just so lucky.
We live in a much better generation, dude.
We live in a very good generation, but I think we also live in a time where Fucked Up's benefited from very good luck. Because it was like... It's just surreal that we get these opportunities.
Right. Now... Have you given any thought to what you would like to do when David Comes to Life next? Like Broadway musical, full length movie?
I don't know if we could. I don't think we're going to do any of those. I think we're going to write a script and have like a finished, completed script.
Okay.
I'd love to see a group of kids try it. I'd love to see us try and play the whole record live, start to finish one time.
Mm-hmm.
I'd love to see us learn all the records, all the songs. We still have never played the whole thing. Live, so, or at most of the songs live, so, you know, I still would like to learn all the lyrics, because I'm still learning some of the lyrics, so,
yeah,
there's a long way to go for this record before we get to the movie stage.
Yeah. Well, if you ever think about doing a musical and such, we here in the Massachusetts area, we've got the American Repertory Theater. This is where Serge Tankian premiered Prometheus Band a couple months ago.
Well, and I also saw there's a theater across the street doing the Blue Man Group, so they will... Maybe we'll just move the show there afterwards and do a play.
Yeah.
Get the Blue Man Group to play David and Veronica. Just put wigs on them.
That'd be awesome.
It'd be amazing. It'd be a good show.
It's like you come up singing and they're just in there.
Yeah, that would be something no one would expect. Fucked up collaboration with Blue Man Group.
Did all just come out pink to blue too?
Stranger things have happened.
Stranger things have happened.
David and Veronica attacked by Smurfs.
Pardon me?
It's called David and Veronica attacked by Smurfs.
Now, you all set? Now moving on to another cool thing you guys do.
Yeah.
Your annual Chinese Zodiac Calendar EPs. We started that Year of the Dog and have so far gone up to Year of the Ox, which I gotta say has been your like piece of resistance.
Oh,
I've never heard anything so beautifully done.
Oh, that's awesome.
In, in my entire life.
That's awesome.
Well, who originally came up with the idea of doing these?
We wrote this song called Year of the Dog, and originally I don't think we had a name for it, and we were just talking about what to call it, and I think Mike said Year of the Dog. We recorded the day of the Super Bowl and the Rolling Stones played because we sampled that.
Yeah.
And then it was kind of like next year came around and there was this whole thing around this guy in Vancouver who had been killing sex workers for years. He killed like 30-some-odd women. It was just so horrific that we were like, we wanted to do something about it, but we didn't want to just do like a little song because like that will trivialize the whole thing.
Right.
So, you know, and Mike wrote this song called "Year of the Pig," and we're just like, oh, well, this works great. And then we just were like, well, let's keep it going.
Right.
So we just are. I'm going to go back and finish doing vocals on "Year of the Tiger."
Oh, and then we're gonna be done. I cannot wait to hear that.
It's pretty interesting. It's like me, Annie Claude, who we did "Year of the Ox" live with that time.
Oh, right. She's the one who's singing French.
Yeah, and Jim Jarmusch, the film director.
Holy shit!
It's a weird collaboration.
Are you gonna have like a full backing orchestra like you did with the Year of the Ox?
I have no idea what they've done with the complete arrangements because I've yet to hear the whole song sitting down. But I think it's not. I don't think we're gonna have the strings this time. Is there strings on it, Mike?
You're the tiger?
No. So yeah, like I think for us also it's about trying things differently each time. You know?
Yeah. Awesome. Now besides your work in Fucked Up, you're now also the host of The Wedge on Much Music. Now, how did you manage to score this gig?
Through being, once again, incredibly lucky, because of the work, because of Fucked Up, like part of the band's thing that is talking to people, doing interviews, and I love doing it. I just love talking to people. I talk constantly, which I guess is one of the reasons they now, at my work, say they wish they had known I talked as much before they hired me. I talk for all day. So they, but anyway, I met them and they said they'd seen some interviews and they liked how I came across and I did some hosting stuff for Pitchfork TV. And they're like, would you like to come in and talk to us? And I had been asked actually before Fucked Up formed to be a VJ on Much Music, really? And I dropped it to school, and then they didn't hire me. So yeah, it sucked. But like you know, 10 years later, here I am with a job. Yeah, like I don't know. There's a few people there that are in positions of power that are really supportive of the show and really supportive of the band and have let me kind of do both. And so as long as those people keep their jobs, I will have my TV show. But as soon as they get fired, I will lose the TV show. And that being said, it's not my TV show. Like, I think...
Yeah, it's been around for years.
It's been around for years. And also, I don't get to pick all the videos. There are some days where I'm, like, not picking any of the videos that we're playing. But I also have to pretend to like things I don't like. Which is kind of like...
I hate that, too.
Yeah, which was kind of the key thing. I don't like... I can go in and be like, yo, this is not my thing. I don't like this video. And it's fine.
Right.
Because I wasn't going to agree to do it if I had to be like, hey, here's the brand new...
Miley Cyrus.
Yes. Theory of a Dead Man or like, Nickelback.
They're like... Yeah, check this out.
Like that fake smile that people on Much Music and MTV always have, and stuff like. But that being said, I've also been really surprised at how much people love music there. Like,
yeah,
you kind of. I think my big critique as a kid was like, people don't like music there. That's the problem.
It's what MTV used to be.
Like, yeah, well,
in the old days, MTV, everybody loved music. Now it's 17 hours of Jersey Shore.
Yeah. Well, I think the thing is, the problem is that we live in a world now where there's no overriding cultural thing, you know? Like, there's not, like, a grunge movement or, like, a first wave of hip-hop movement where, like, every kid is kind of getting wrapped up in it. There's a million little movements happening all the time, you know?
Yeah.
There's, like, chill wave, and then there's, like, like the power violence resurgence in hardcore, you know. Yes. And then there's like, so there's all these little tiny things happening all at once, and we just, you can't really get people to galvanize in the same way, so you can't really have a music station to be like, here we are covering all the best music, because you could cover 20 bands and kind of make claim that you're covering most of the music going on people's mainstream radar.
Right.
But like when you have, if you look at the Billboard charts now, and you look at the bands, like how many bands there are on that chart that are selling kind of within the same $5,000 to $10,000 record range, it's so many different bands, and that's like the majority of the Billboard charts. Whereas before, yes, it would be top 10 selling millions and millions, and then everything
right
else.
Yeah, I totally agree.
So
with
I think MTV had to, you know, MTV at the end of the day, you know, they're about selling advertising.
Basically.
Yeah. And if the Jersey Shore is what people are watching, and I have to admit, I kind of watched the Jersey Shore in the beginning. I thought it was. My first season, I thought it was funny.
And then second season on, it became sad.
Yeah, well, and halfway through the first season, even, I was like, I don't like these people. Like, I don't. You know, like, you watch, if you were to watch 24. You like Jack Bauer.
Of course. Yes.
You think, like, he might be a flawed person in that. He might be a flawed character, but he still, at the end of the day, cheer for him. Mm-hmm. On the Jersey Shore, you don't care about any of them.
Yes.
One of my exes, she used to watch the show, and it was on one day when I was over. And I kind of made her mad, because I'm like, honey, is this what happened when the Oompa Loompas retired? They put on gold jewelry and went to the Jersey?
Yeah,
she's like,
oh, absolutely.
She's like, they're not Oompa Loompas. I'm like, they're orange and wear jewelry.
Well, right, fucking horse.
But
no, but and like, and
it's funny because there's only one occasion where there were like all characters were dislikable, but the show was still really good. It was a British sitcom called The Young Ones.
Oh, The Young Ones is amazing. But The Young Ones, it's like, it's a comedy.
Yes.
Like, you're not meant to feel emotionally attached to the characters. Like, whereas in, you know, you're never meant to be like, oh man, Julian got hit in the nuts. I really feel sorry for Julian. But when you watch the Jersey Shore, you're meant to be like, oh,
Snooki wanted snoo, and she couldn't have it.
Yeah, or so and so is fighting with so and so, and they're sad. But then you're like, fuck them. I want them to die.
It's like, where's the guy with the, you know, chainsaw?
Yeah, like that show needs a rocket launcher as another component. But like, you know, but that's the thing, is like, people invent those characters and they just want those characters to live
horribly.
Well, they live, like, they want to watch people wallow in misery. Like, that's why Jerry Springer was popular.
Yeah.
That's why I watch trash TV too, so I'm not criticizing anyone for watching Jersey Shore, but that's why, you know, much music in MTV don't have as much music.
Can I take this quote?
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
Now, one of the other things I ever heard that you were trying to accomplish, we were touching about it before the interview, is you wanted to start your own pro wrestling podcast program.
Yeah, still coming together.
So, where did this fascination for, like, muscle men grappling each other in the ring originate from?
When I was a kid, I liked wrestling. I was, like, you know, I was kind of in, I was the right age for all the big boom periods. Like, I was the right age for Hulkamania, and I was the right age for the Attitude Era. But I was never obsessed with it, you know? Like, I had friends that were really into it. I would watch it, but it was never something that I would, like, be appointment viewing for me, and things that I would be, like, you know,
you had to do.
I had to do. And then in my mid, because I also, at the time, like, in retrospect, I look back, it's like, no shit, I was not excited about it. Hulkamania, all those wrestling matches were boring as shit for the most part.
Right.
Like, you know, Savage versus Steamboat, but, like, what about the other two WrestleManias before that had nothing on them that were...
Yeah.
Truthfully, like, I was a big fan of wrestling growing up, and then Owen Hart died.
Yeah.
And the way he died, and I watched that with my father, I stopped watching it. I lost all, like...
No, I know a lot of people, but that was the thing for me, is, like, I was, like, in WWE, the Attitude Era, it became, like, kind of sexist, kind of homophobic. And
yeah.
Like, and I didn't find that, like, fun.
I stopped watching it, like, right after the whole WCW invasion.
Invasion,
thing.
And Katie that, Dick, and, like...
It
know,
started getting disgusting.
Yeah, I got just, like, yeah, like, it got, like... I remember watching one flipping through the channels one night, kind of after I got into... I'll explain how I got into wrestling. And there was, like, something where JR, who was legitimately sick in a way...
Yeah.
And Vince McMahon's, like, pulling a head out of his ass and all this shit. And it's just, like... This is like,
horrible.
This is immature.
And like my kid brother, you know, he was watching it, you know, I'm trying to figure out, you know, what he was into on it. And you know, they had like the old ladies, Mae Young and all them, running around in their underwear,
yeah.
Like, oh,
yeah.
Oh.
And it's like, it used to be fanfare. I mean, granted, you know, there are some things I loved Sable. And,
yeah,
you know,
I love
Sable. There is some time, sometimes you need the fan service.
And now she's married to Brock Lesnar.
She is.
But there are, they just went too far. I think they just went too crazy.
But then when I hit my mid-20s and I started working in this video store in Toronto, and this guy I worked with, who was older than me, started bringing in wrestling tapes, and he started bringing in ECW stuff, which I'd never seen.
Oh my god!
Like I'd heard about it, and I had friends that were into it, but I never really watched it. And he started bringing in old Smoky Mountain wrestling, Memphis wrestling tapes, St. Louis stuff, and and just sort of kind of exposing me and kind of educating me on the other side of the wrestling business that wasn't WWF or E.
Right. I still call WWF. I don't give a fuck what panda wants.
They sued World Wildlife Federation first.
Oh.
They started the lawsuit and then lost, and then they lost so badly that they had to change the name.
Oh, Jay, I didn't know that part.
Truthfully, I think the one thing that really pissed me off about all that was when Vince McMahon was actually saying that Hawk committed suicide.
Yeah.
From Hawk and Eagle, and then Hawk actually died of a heart attack.
Yeah.
And I'm sorry, I grew up a Hawk and Animal fan. And when they left, and then they came back to Legion of Doom with the helmets and shoulder pads.
Well, that's the thing that's crazy to watch is as a fan, is how wrestling is. To people that don't know wrestling, they're like, oh, it's that fake thing on TV. But there's so many weird things happening behind the scenes. There's drug abuse. There's crazy weird violence. There's all that stuff. There's all these weird scandals. But then there's also this really cool, hardworking, athletic new wave of people coming up, Daniel Bryan, CM Punk.
So basically, it's high school all over again.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's always cliques, and it sucks. I was actually totally unrelated to wrestling, but more related to punk rock and hardcore. You grow up and you're in high school and you're like, I fucking hate high school. I hate how there's all this cliques bullshit. I hate how all these people are.
They're trying to be someone that they're not.
Yeah, and I hate how people are mean to each other, and I hate all this shit. But, and then you're like, well, punk rock's different, and it's so awesome. And then you get to punk, you go get in punk rock, and you can see that sometimes people just replicate the same bullshit. I'm like, and you know what, whatever, I guess it's we all want to feel wanted at the end of the day.
Now, here's a question. Say you are a pro wrestler. Which one of your song titles would be your finishing move, and what would it be?
That's a hard one. I got this one idea. I would do the other shoe, and I would just literally stomp the person into submission.
Oh. You see, I was thinking Crooked Head. Suplex into a pile driver.
Oh, that'd be awesome. Ooh. That's a good idea. Or the let her rest.
Wrestling. That sounds like an Undertaker move right there.
Yeah, exactly. It's the most emo fucked up title.
Now, I know this is years from now, but I reckon you've thought about it at least once.
No, yes.
When your son reaches the age where he goes to school.
Yes.
And the teachers have to ask the students to bring their parents in one day to tell the class what they do for a living. Do you have any idea what you're going to tell them?
Oh, I will absolutely, because I actually had to do a speech at my old high school. My old high school asked Joan and I back, because we both went to the same high school, and we went in and gave a speech about what it was like to be in a band. And even though we were giving it to 18-year-old kids, the teachers there sucked. And we censored everything. So, from being on the radio and things like that, I'll just kind of explain to the kids that I'm a performer, All right, so I'm back. We just saw you guys perform live, and
Great job.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much.
I can't believe it. First song in Queen of Hearts, there's already someone naked in the audience.
There was someone naked in the audience?
The old Canada dude.
Oh, that's right. He was down to his underwear. That's true.
He actually lost his underwear for a moment.
Did he? So did I. Someone pulled down my underwear at one point.
Yeah, but he had them off and went to the stage time and they told me he had to put them back on.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so he had
we played in England one time and the security guards threw out a naked guy in the middle of winter.
No!
Yeah, we give him our Santa Claus jackets to keep warm.
Oh,
felt bad for the dude. Like,
behind him have to steal him.
No, because they know they call your booking agent if you steal the towels.
Holiday Inn.
Yeah.
I'm gonna have Damien sign one.
Sure, I'll do that. Hey. Why don't we take one of Ice Age's?
Well, this is their room.
That's true. Yeah. What's Ice Age and Jeff,
dude,
the brother?
Sign the fucking
I love both those kids. Yeah.
We toured with
Ice Age before, and they're funny dudes.
Yeah. Real yeah, we were actually talking to them beforehand. Him.
Yeah. Okay. Cool. Awesome.
Yeah, we got a chance to step in here, you know, before they went on.
Yeah.
Speak to them for a few.
That's cool. Awesome.
Yeah.
The security guy thought they were French Canadian, and I'm like, they don't sound French.
Now, you've said that David Comes to Life marks the end of an era for Fucked Up. What makes you believe that, and what do you see for the next era of the band?
I think I've just kind of said my piece, you know, like as a singer. Not to say I want to leave the band, I still will be a singer, but I think we want to bring in other people. And, you know, just kind of try and do different things with the band. Like, I kind of think it's getting to the point now where I don't know how it's going to take shape after that record, because you can't really dial back from a concept record. You can't be like,
right,
here's a concept record and here's the next thing. So I don't know what we're going to do, but I just kind of think I want the band to kind of like change a little bit and add some other members or play around with some stuff. Like, that's not to say that, like,
don't broken social scene. No.
I'm not going to as much as I love Kevin Drew, he's one of my best friends. I love that dude to death. But yeah, like, I don't want to do that. But at the same time, I also want to make sure that this band doesn't start just trying to do the same things over and over again and beating it to death.
I mean, that's what happened with Green Day. I mean, I loved American Idiot. But then when they came up with 21st Century Breakdown, I was like, this is the same thing.
Yeah, like, that's the problem. It's like, you know, I don't want to be that band that does the same thing again and again. And so I think the next record, it's just going to be, who knows how it's going to take shape.
So you think it's going to be more straightforward the next
I don't think it's going to be more straightforward. I think it's going to be, I have no idea how it's going to take shape. You know, I have no idea how it's going to, like, how the changes are going to manifest themselves.
Right. I mean, you could be like The Who. Like, they did the couple concert albums here and there. Then they did their own regular album.
Yeah.
I
just kind of think it's kind of like approaching a natural conclusion.
Right.
You know, and I just don't want to be that guy that is trying to milk it.
Right. Yeah. We've had, and there have been people that milked it. I think
Sinatra was one person that at least, like, his style of music is something that can appreciate with it,
right,
you know? Like, whereas my thing, I don't want to be the guy that's can't go out in the crowd anymore because I've blown my knees and busted my back. I don't want to be the Hulk Hogan of, you know, like a guy who should have retired a long time ago.
Or Terry Funk.
Terry Funk, though.
No, he can still pull.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like I was going to say I don't want to be Ric Flair or Terry Funk, but both those guys are still, like, amazing at what they do.
Yeah.
But, like, you know, like Scott Steiner. Like, there's, like, guys that shouldn't be doing what they're doing right now.
When he jacked up, it was just one of the worst things that happened.
Yeah, he gets gassed real easy, and it's, like, it's obviously these guys have to make a living and stuff like that, but I don't want to get... I never want to be the guy that people are, like... That, I don't want to be disingenuous.
Have you thought about doing collaboratives?
Yeah, we do collaborations all the time. We've got, like
an entire CD.
Yeah, we might, like, who knows what we're going to do for the next one. Like, it might take some shape like that. Who knows? Yeah.
Personally, I'd love to see you guys just have a Weird Al Yankovic. Really awesome. Is your funny personality and his?
He's got a funny I would love to do something with Weird Al, too.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, he just did a Lady Gaga.
Right. Yeah, I know. For him this way. One band I can think of that would be amazing for you to collaborate with. They were the last band we interviewed, Hunter Valentine.
Oh, from Canada.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
Interesting story. They actually came onto MTV Live the day after you guys went on.
Yeah, I know.
They were, like, shocked at how destroyed it was. The motorcycle was still there.
Yeah. No, everything got fucked up that day. Legit.
Well, all right.
I brought my friend Greg from Mental.
Nice to meet you, Greg.
Nice to meet you, man. What's the magazine?
Well, we have a radio.
It's a podcast.
Yeah.
Oh,
what's up, man?
Yeah, we're actually...
Celtics, hell yeah.
Yeah, we're actually...
Oh, Henry Perkins. Yeah, I know the Nile of the Celtics.
We're about to celebrate our 100th episode this Sunday.
Congratulations. That's awesome.
Thank you.
That's awesome. No, it's like... Well, it's funny because Greg to me is like, you know, and I'm not just going to say this because you're in the room, because I was thinking about this on the drive in today. Like, I just remember when Mental came out, how it was like, just like everything was so exciting. And it was like they were doing something really new. And I remember it was just around the time Fucked Up was starting. And even though it was like we were trying to do something different, it was like so inspiring to watch. So now, Greg, can I stay
here
together?
Yeah.
Yes. Awesome.
All right. So now. I wonder if some of your funny like road trip stories.
I guess the funniest story from us, like tour stories, you mean?
Yeah.
We were playing in Germany. We're touring Germany, and we're driving down the highway, and all of a sudden our tire blows on our van, and we're like, "Fuck!" So it's the middle of the night in the middle of nowhere, Germany. We pull over to the side of the road. We are like, "We are screwed." All of a sudden, a Honda Civic pulls up, and these guys get out. These guys, and they come over. And they're like, "We're Russian." And we're like, "Okay." And we're like, "We're Canadian." And they're like, "Okay, what's wrong?" We're like, "Our tire's flat." And they're like, "Okay, we will help you." And then they go over to their car, pop the trunk, pop out these giant speakers, and start blasting techno. These are us guys. And we're like, "How does this help us?" And then all of a sudden, it was almost like the bat signal. All these other cars start pulling up, and they're all these Russian dudes. And we're like, "Oh, this is crazy." So Ben starts filming them with this little flip camera, and one of them sees that he's the camera and loses his fucking mind and comes over and starts grabbing Ben and like trying to grab the camera. And we're like, "Whoa, whoa, 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 what, yo, yo." And he's like, "Erase, erase, erase." So he makes Ben erase the video. Ben erases the video and just hops in the car, and they just hop in the car and take off, all their cars, and take off. And we're like, "What the fuck was that?"
Did they ever fix a tire?
Actually, we met the nicest police officer I've ever met in my entire life that night, a German guy. And he drove us around and found a garage that would fix it.
Excellent.
And it worked out amazing. Well, not financially, but we stayed in a town and all the hotels were booked, so except with the super fancy one. So we stayed in a super nice hotel, but it cost us a fortune. But it was still nice to stay in a nice hotel.
Yeah. One of my favorite stories is your trip to China. This was something that bands wait probably for decades to actually go out and do there.
The Canadian government has a an interesting cultural exchange program with China.
Yes.
Where they, sorry.
It's okay.
They send bands over to China, like six a year. It'll be bands like Hunter Valentine, I think, is gone.
Yeah.
Colorado, like a lot of Canadian bands. We would never be asked to go on this. We would be told not to go on this. We would be told to stay the fuck away from China by the Canadian government. So we decided, well, we want to go to China. We got offered this incredible show in Japan where they paid us way more money than we ever deserved to get paid. And we're like, "So we have this extra money. Why don't we, you know, do something we'll never be able to do?" Because we knew we would never make money in China. And this kid had been writing us, being like, this American guy that lived there named Abe.
Yes.
And he's like, "I brought DOA and the Queers over. I want to bring you guys over." And we're like, "Okay, well, like, that sounds great. But, you know," and he's like, "But it's going to cost this much money for you guys to fly and all this shit." He's like, "You won't lose money." Oh, no, sorry. You'll lose money, but not a ton. So we had all this money from Japan. We're like, "Let's go to China." So we went to China. We took a boat, and because we thought it would be less suspicious than if we flew. And all of us threw up for 48 hours straight on the boat. China was amazing, though. The shows were incredible, and you really get to see how kids, no matter where they are in the world, except for Germany and Japan, I find kids relate to music slightly differently. But kids just relate to music in a very similar way.
And yeah.
China was amazing. You also got to see like kids that are like literally the government is telling them it's illegal to do what you're doing, and they're still finding a way to do it.
Yeah. So take that, Rolling Stones.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So, but for us, it was like, like a really unique experience to get that. But for us, it was like, I ate bees, deep fried bees.
They got it.
Yeah. Holy shit. Fish eyeballs. Fish eyeballs were actually really gross. Chicken feet.
You didn't eat dog, did you?
Whole frogs. No, I couldn't do dog. Like, obviously, I'm a hypocrite because I do eat meat.
Yes.
But you know, I you know, and I don't mean to be culturally insensitive, but as someone who's grown up with dogs not being on the menu, I found the thought of eating dog.
How can you eat man's best friend?
Your dog.
Yeah, but that being said, like in India, they like, you know, worship cows, so they would think it was just as barbaric me eating a beef sandwich. So I'm a you know, it's all culturally relative, you know.
Yes.
But for me, like, yeah, so eating a dog was kind of the one thing that I did.
Get that later.
Yeah.
Sorry.
So. My final question.
Yes.
This is something that I ask all the bands. When we traveled to a place called Three Album Island, where if you had found yourself Gilliganed on a deserted island and you had somehow built your own vinyl record player out of coconuts and oil and vine, which three albums would you like to have on you to keep you sane?
I've thought about this before, so I'm actually pretty good with my answer. Rocky Erickson, Evil One. Rocky Erickson was the original singer of 13th Floor Elevators.
Okay.
He got completely destroyed by drugs and then by the, I guess, institution that he got placed in.
Mm-hmm.
They experimented on electroshock therapy. Like, just horrible things. Horrible things.
Wow.
But anyway, he made this record called Evil One, and I think it's one of the most beautiful records ever made. That would definitely be there. I'd want a rap record, so I'd probably bring... Black Moon Enter the Dust Stage, which is like a New York rap record that I think is phenomenal. And then I'd want to have some other hardcore punk record. And this is always the hard part because, like, you know, there's so many 7-inches I'd want to bring. So I'd actually bring a CD that came out, and I actually bought it years ago, called World's Finest Hardcore Volume 2.
Ooh.
I've never seen Volume 1. I don't know if it exists. But Volume 2 was, like, something that got me into, like, collecting rare records because it was where I first heard a lot of these bands. But it has Sick Pleasure, The Neos, The Necros, Really Red, mm-hmm. Clit Boys...
Did it have Young Canadians?
No, it didn't have Young Canadians. Let's Go to Hawaii, though. It was an amazing
song.
Oh,
Let's Go to fucking Hawaii.
Yeah, amazing, amazing song. That guy, Art Bergman, has had a really tragic kind of existence since then. Drugs and stuff, and then he wound up washing dishes for a while. I don't know where he's at
now. I feel bad because Young Canadians was one of those bands that I thought was going to be like... I wasn't alive.
Yeah, but they should have been.
They should have been, they should have been the Canadian Ramones. They should have become that big.
Well, there's another band called Teenage Head.
Yes!
That was also called the Canadian Ramones. And they're one of those bands that I think for me just like, they just sound so good, you know? Like, Picture My Face is just a beautiful, beautiful punk song. So I'd probably bring that as my third record. But, like, there's so many, obviously, I'm saying that right now, I could easily swap out GZA, Liquid Swords. I probably would swap out GZA, Liquid Swords for Enter the Stage. I could probably swap out Rocky Erickson for Velvet Underground and Nico. Or I could swap it out for something else, you know. There's like, if that's the thing, problem, or the Animals, Greatest Hits Collection, which came out in the 60s.
Do you mean the studio version or the live Greatest Hits?
I think it's the studio version where they're all like sitting on the cover.
Right.
The Best of the Animals, it says on the top.
Yeah, my dad has the live Best of.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure it's
amazing.
Eric Burdon's got one of the best vocals ever. And Rocky Erickson, too. Like, that's why. Actually, fuck it. I'm not swapping out Rocky Erickson, Evil One. That one's staying. GZA is in instead of Black Moon. And World's Finest Hardcore, I'm swapping out for Age of Quarrel, or the Cleveland Hardcore mix CD that Chris Minicucci from Boston made me.
Oh, nice.
There we go.
Because, dude, I saw your whole little record collection that you have on that Spin interview.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Oh, I'm jealous, dude.
They didn't show my 7-inches, though.
Yeah.
My 7-inches are on the other side, but I have a horrible addiction.
Dude, man, I'm one of those guys...
Wrong with being addicted to music.
No, exactly.
I'm like, the same way.
It's a positive thing, but, like, that being said, I had a problem. And I've since reined it in a little bit since my wife took away my eBay password.
Oh!
Well, that's fine. I'm glad, because I was ringing up $700 to $800 bills each
month.
Did
you want to use my eBay? use the eBay box?
And I'll send you the money? So, there we go.
My mom would be like, so, what's going on with you? Fucked up.
You don't want to get me back. It's like offering a heroin addict heroin again.
Yeah,
but it's like going up to Kurt Cobain, being like, "Just one more fix, bro." But dude, it's all about going to the record stores.
With the shotgun.
Yeah.
And we all know she did it.
But dude, it's all about going to the record stores. Yeah, exactly. I love mingling with the people, getting into new artists.
Yeah, and buying records in record stores. I much prefer that. And that's how I buy records.
That's why I love Newbury Comics around here.
Cool store.
It's one of my favorite record stores. If that went away, I would probably sit in a corner and cry.
There's also another wicked place. I'm trying to remember what it's called. It's Down Some Stairs. Fuck.
It's right near Condom World, right?
I don't know. I've never had a need to go to Condom World yet. I've been married since before I started touring, so, you know, the last thing I need on tour is condoms.
Right.
Actually, fucked up is the anti-sexual. It's the opposite of ecstasy. It makes you de-horny. It makes your sexual organs retracted to your body.
I'm sorry. I don't know how it's possible. Sandy's beautiful.
Sandy is a I'm not saying that, but Sandy does not want to have sex with us. And we don't want to have sex with Sandy. And we don't want to have sex with each other. So we're like, in the van, the only sex that's being had is probably solo, and we don't talk about it. We're not that kind of band.
It's like you turn up the music. Okay, everybody, go to your special place.
No one look. No one look. Make eye contact. No one look at each other in the eye. They would be the worst thing I could ever imagine.
Okay, I think that's the best and worst way to end an interview. David Comes to Life is in stores now. If you don't go out and listen to this album, you're a fucking idiot.
It's probably the best album. Well, gentlemen, congratulations on the 100th episode of the podcast.
Thank you.
May there be 100 more.
Yes.
Someday.
Damien, you have been awesome. Yeah.